Thanks for listening. This is the K-State Radio Network and Agriculture Today. And for openers, our cattle market segment for the week. Alongside once more is livestock economist Glenn Tonzer of K-State Research and Extension with a tale of two markets in some respects here, Glenn, as we look at last week's trade. The futures market reversed its direction at late week, but the cash market did fairly well overall.
Yeah, so I would agree. We ended the week going in different directions, but the tone was similar earlier in the week. Let's go to the cash market first. As Fed trade, we actually ended Friday at about 120 and a half. That was up about $2 for the week. And when we look over to feeder cattle, depending on which market I'd quote around the country, I'd say we were up about $5. There's a couple flat, actually a couple cases at $10 up. The feeder cattle auctions that were Monday through Wednesday were pretty much across the board all up. Those later in the week weren't up quite as high. So the cash market, we had a nice week on balance, but it was not matched, as you said, on the board. So we closed the week down $1.50 on the December live cattle contract at just over 117. And then the nearby January feeder cattle contract was down about $3 for the week at just over 150. Most of that pullback was on Friday, actually. So that leads me to speculate a little bit about, you know, did the futures see something at the end of the week that isn't embedded in some of those cash numbers I noted? And the commentary around Friday's trade was, have we already had the run on holiday purchases? So, you know, this is the time of year that we have a pre-advanced purchasing of beef for Christmas featuring. And I think there's just some unknown and concerns that maybe that part of the positive demand story might already be behind us. And if that was the case, we would see some pressure on cutout. And indeed, we saw that as the week ended. So the choice cutout actually broke 206, down $5 for the week. Select cutout was 183.61, down $4 for the week. And as I alluded there, we saw towards the end of the week the cutout coming down even stronger than those the animal side that I shared a moment ago. I want to highlight also, though, there's kind of a mixed bag in those cutout numbers is, yes, they came down towards the end of the week. That's still a choice select spread. That's $22, and that's a very large number. So for, you know, this time of year, we typically increase the choice select spread. It really kind of hits towards the bottom around August, and we're coming up leading into this holiday purchasing. So it's not uncommon for it to be going up, but the fact that we're at $22 is notably higher than normal. And leads me to speculate that I think there's two things going on there. One is we do have some higher slaughter numbers going. So if embedded in that we have more select product coming, that's going to depress the select side of that margin. But the other side is if the positive demand story we've been having for some time is on quote-unquote higher quality beef, that at the same time will pull up that choice side. So, you know, time will tell if this holds, but I will monitor. The choice select spread at $22 here at the very beginning of December does stand out compared to normal trends.
Well, how pivotal on the demand side is this very week ahead of us, the first full week of December, toward that end then, is determining what will happen ahead of Christmas with beef demand?
Yeah, I think it's very, very critical. So it's always easy to talk about what might happen instead of, you know, putting your money on it. But over the next 10 days, we're going to kind of come to an end on whatever that holiday buying is, and we may have already hit it. The market, in some sense, on Friday was signaling the pull down is concerned we've already hit it. In the event the cutout is down more this coming week and that the board and cash trade follows it, in the absence of something else, I'm going to sit here a week from now saying, okay, all that pre-holiday buy-in is in, and now we got to hope we don't continue to, I don't want to say crash, but decline in this market in December because there's not a clear demand signal, right? Another holiday event or something like that between now and the end of the year. So my cautious hope is that there is still some holiday buying to be had, whether that is consumers that are going to buy more than we anticipated or they're going to respond stronger to those features or whatever that might be as the actual holiday event occurs. Those that are actually institutional buyers, right, are the ones that are buying in advance of that, and that's really what we're watching right now. I can kind of tell it both ways, but I really think the tone of 2017 is going to be set this coming week because we're going to know what that domestic demand story is for the rest of 2017. Profitability for the year isn't set in the last month, of course, but the tone of the year is dictated by the last couple of weeks, and that carries over into 2018.
When we look at the feeder cattle market once again, you've put together some information on price spreads there that may be instructive as far as how one might manage their feeders.
Yes. So I think it's good to put on a historical context and then also just remind ourselves, and this calf yearling spread is something that cow-calf and stocker enterprises are always managing. We're sitting here early December, and one of the decisions here has already been made. Most people have already made their decision whether to retain or not. But even those that now own a calf with the intent to sell it sometime in the spring, They could alter if they sell it in February versus March or March versus April or whatever. There's still room to adjust that decision. Just because you're embedded in that enterprise doesn't give you a final firm date on the sale date. And the reason I highlight that is James Mitchell's a PhD student here at K-State, worked with me to pull together kind of a history of what is the spread between the November calf and the March yielding price over the last roughly 15 years, and how is this year, the one we're in right now, kind of compared. And we have a fact sheet on Ag Manager. I encourage folks to go look at it if you want the more details. But the punchline would be from June of 17 until about now, the spread between the November and the March contracts continued to narrow. And what that means is that basically the price premium on a calf relative to yearling was shrinking. And that encourages somebody to invest and take on the risk of, you know, basically buying into producing that yearling. And we saw that throughout October and November was basically the market signaling for somebody. And if there's a cow-calf producer who's interested to retain their own, I'm mainly highlighting that, A, just to call attention to this resource. I want people to read it and make use of it. But the second part would be is embedded in there, again, is our use of the beefbasis.com resource. I encourage those that are in that enterprise with an intent maybe to sell in March a yearling, maybe to push the pencil, and maybe it makes sense to sell in February instead or April instead. Just because you've initiated that enterprise doesn't mean that final decision is set, and I encourage people to keep doing that homework.
So look at that. If, in fact, you've retained those calves, you want to maximize what profits might be available, that's good information to check out on agmanager.info. Glenn, you bring to our attention more information that actually originates out of Oklahoma State University and colleagues down there, including a frequent guest here on this broadcast, Daryl Peel. It looked at steak size and how that ties into the demand equation. What is the drift of this?
Yeah, so this study was motivated by, you know, most our listeners are well aware of animals are much larger than they used to be, to the tune over the last 40 years. I think there's over a 300-pound increase in carcass weights, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of reasons for that, and I could give a long, long story behind that. But one of the key outcomes of that is we have much larger steak products than we used to. But we also have more pounds of ground beef where there's not really a downside of larger carcasses. So what this article gets at is specifically what are consumer preferences for steak size. And they find on average a U.S. consumer would prefer a thicker but less surface area steak. So think one that's kind of, you know, fit between your hands like, I don't want to say baseball, but think baseball size, so thicker and shorter that way, as opposed to thinner and fill the plate. And why is that relevant? As you have a bigger and bigger carcass, retailers have to think about what kind of product they buy and how they cut it and how they put it in front of consumers. And this is the kind of thing that's embedded in a much bigger discussion about whether or not we're producing too big of animals, whether or not cow size needs to change. There's a lot of things to this. I highlight it today for one main reason. One is to give credit to a study that I think is overdue. And you know, some of this thing needs to be vetted out more, so I want to call attention to that. Daryl Peel is a regular visitor here, so I want to give him credit for that as well as one of the co-authors. But the second part would be is the deeper economic point on you can have a technology, and there's actually a host of technologies that lead to larger animals, and there's a lot of trade-offs embedded in that. There's no doubt that there's a ground beef side benefit because we produce more ground beef and it's cheaper per pound than it would be if we had smaller carcasses. That's pretty much certain in my mind. So that's a definite benefit for consumers. What's less of a definite benefit is the steak size implications. So this study highlights the fact that at least some consumers would be better off if we were offering different size steaks, or maybe we come up with different technologies to prepare that and cut it differently and those kind of things. So this whole issue about economics is not simple. Applies here. You can have net gain of larger animals, and yet some beef products we may be having a demand hit from because we might be offering it in a form that's not ultimately desired. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is the death knell for steak demand. I don't want anybody to take it that way. Rather, I just want to highlight this kind of trade-off between certain technologies can be a definite win for ground beef and maybe not other products is embedded in this story that we produce a whole animal, and then we have lots and lots of products that come from it, and no one person in the world eats those products in equal proportions. So the heterogeneity that's embedded in that of what aggregates up to total beef demand is a complex story that I'm always harping on, and I like this particular study of giving us some more insights on that steak size piece. So those that are interested in it are welcome to contact me or Daryl Peel or the other co-authors, Josh Maples at Mississippi State and Jason Lusk, who's now at Purdue University, would be happy to comment on, I'm sure.
But indeed, this is something that is managed in part and not in small part on the hoof, so it's more fodder for the dialogue on providing that product that the consumer prefers. Interesting work indeed out of Oklahoma State. Lastly, Glenn, you'll be on the circuit along with your colleagues from Agricultural Economics for those four Farming for the Future meetings that K-State Research and Extension will be putting on. Two of those later this month, two of them in January, and you, of course, will be talking market outlook there.
Yes, so I encourage folks to go to our Ag Manager website to get the brochures, the exact dates and locations. They're all laid out there. That particular program has a little bit more of a long-run focus. So I will be there providing what I call a immediate outlook, you know, Q&A presentation, but I will also have an extra focus on what the next 10 years look like. Not that I claim to have every number figured out over the next 10 years, but I'll be sharing a host of USDA's numbers on that front, commenting on them, and embedded in that as well, which is timely, I think our listeners will appreciate, is clarifying the current importance of trade, where USDA thinks that's going in the future, and if I'm effective, dispelling some myths on, you know, the role of trade in the market.
Very good. Those are taking place quickly. Pratt, December the 14th. Salina, December the 19th. Scott City, January 10th. Emporia, January the 11th. All the pertinent information on the Farming for the Future meetings on agmanager.info. As always, a pleasure. Glenn, thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Eric.
This week's cattle market commentary from Glenn Tonzer, livestock economist, K-State Research and Extension. And you're tuned to Agriculture Today.